The Fan on Demand. Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Coming up this week, no big show for Nintendo at E3. Should girls be playable in the next edition of FIFA? And two to beam up in our review section with Star Trek and LEGO City Undercover, The Chase Begins.
Have you got game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Omen Qureshi, Christine Chubb, and Brian Calhoun around the table once again. And boy, we went through a few slow weeks of news, but the last few weeks, it's just like everything is like flying at us.
Welcome to the pre-summer days.
Yeah, there is so much to talk about. So let's get right to it. Being a sports station, we'll kick off with the fact that we know who is going to be on the cover of Madden 14. And people have chosen the old school versus the new school. What they did is they had a play down with a bunch of current players in one bracket and a bunch of old Hall of Fame players in the other bracket. And in the end, it was Barry Sanders versus Adrian Peterson, and Barry Sanders is on the cover.
I had a feeling the old school was going to win.
Me too. Like, yeah.
It wasn't really much of a competition in my mind.
But Barry Sanders, of everyone you could have picked?
Well, yes, yeah, that absolutely. He's one of the best ever.
I was a little surprised.
No, I completely agree with you, but there were so many other good people in that running that, I don't know, Barry Sanders?
I feel like people have a really strong affinity for Barry Sanders, particularly because he walked away at the top of his game. He walked away.
That's true.
Like 5 to 6 years, I would say, before he could have been done. He just left at the peak of his career.
Yep.
And people always one hand admired him for it, and the other hand really wanted him to come back. So I think people have a particular affinity for Barry Sanders. Sadly for you, Calhoun, no Jerry Rice and his dog.
Well, see, you can understand why I was wondering why it was Barry Sanders.
I understand.
My choice came second place.
I knew what you were alluding to. So there you go. That's who's on the cover of Madden 14. The game comes out in the fall, of course. Perhaps, I think the biggest news of the week is not about something that's going to happen.
I don't know.
It's about
a lot happened this week.
No, I think this. Christine, what do you think? Before I even get to what it is, do you think this is the biggest news of the week?
I think it's up there. I'd say top two at least.
Okay, that's interesting. Oh, I'm interested to know what's your other one.
It's the Xbox.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I don't know.
Okay,
then you throw in THQ, you have a top three depending on.
No, I don't think THQ is anywhere close to these two stories. I like the THQ story, but it's not this. But we're talking about something that is not going to happen versus something that is going to happen. Nintendo has announced that they will not be holding a big fancy E3 press conference, it's big. I'm not going to say it's shocking, but I would say if you don't know how E3 works, basically the show starts on Tuesday afternoon. Before that, the three major companies, Microsoft, Xbox, and Sony, will have press conferences along with
EA, Ubisoft. Yeah. Konami used to do one, but they've been so embarrassed over the years by the reaction people have had to their
pressers.
Yeah. 1 million troops and all that. So now they just do theirs on tape.
So basically, and Nintendo's is always the last one. It would be Tuesday morning. You would have it across the street from the Staples Center. Mm-hmm. And then everybody would walk across the street, go in, and E3 would kick off. But they're not doing one this year.
Yeah.
For the life of me, though, I can't understand why everybody cares this much.
I'll tell you why. Because I think this says volumes about the state of the company and where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why. I think the past few years that we've been, Microsoft and Sony have shown off a lot, and it's gotten really positive reviews. And for Nintendo, this speaks volumes, especially since it's been only 6 months since their latest console came out. You're telling me 6 months after your console came out, you don't have enough to talk about in your presser?
I don't think it's that.
I think that's what it is.
No,
I think
no,
it's a big part of what it is.
No, I'm sure Nintendo has more than enough to talk about. But it always felt like Nintendo's release schedule never really lined up with E3 at all.
Yeah.
So when they walked into E3 and they're like, yeah, we have a few things that we're working on, but we can't tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
You walked away going, well, what the heck? I mean, at the end of last year's press conference, we all walked away going, well, what's the price and the release date of the Wii U?
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
And Nintendo had, well, I'm not totally sure they had nailed it down, but they had probably a list of options they could go to like that if they wanted to. but they really weren't ready to release that information. And it's just an odd time for them. Mm. So considering how much traction they're getting out of their Nintendo Direct little YouTube videos that they've been putting out ever since, I'm not surprised. In fact, I think it's a great move. If you look at, by the way, we should mention all this news came out of the Nintendo Financial Report, their annual earnings call, if you will.
Or lack of earnings call. Go on.
Zing!
They said that they made, what was it, $6 point something or $7 million in actual profit this year, but their operating costs were so much that didn't really help them. Mm-hmm. So when you consider how much their operating cost really is, you take away something like this, which is an expensive event for them, it can't help but, you know, help their bottom line.
Again, I think those earnings, considering you're coming off the back of a brand new console launch, aren't as much as they should be. I mean, if at this time next year, if Sony and Microsoft report earnings like that off the back of a new Xbox or a new PS4, that's a pretty sad thing.
It is.
I screwed up. It was actually $71 million, not $7 million.
See, that makes much more sense. See, that's a number. I was like, $7 million doesn't sound like a lot of money.
Yeah, $71 million actually was how much they made. But also, their operating loss was over $300 million. So, not really a great place for them. But as you say, their biggest console is not in a great place. Along with their numbers, they put out the number of consoles they sold. They only sold 3.4 million Wii U's last year, in the last 12 months since the end of March.
In that same time, it came out in November. So.
Well, in that period.
Right.
But in that period, they also sold 3.9 million Wii's, original Wii's, in that exact same time span. That kind of shows you where the new console is right now.
The thing that amazes me, too, last year they did this, and we scratched our head a little bit about it. They had the big E3 presser, and it was all Wii U, and then they had a whole bunch of smaller little pressers, which is what they're going to do this year. A few people were confused when the news first came out, and they thought that Nintendo wasn't going to E3 at all. No, they will be there.
They will be on the floor.
They will be on the floor, and they will be hosting smaller events. And I remember the second event that they had there, which we didn't go to, but we watched a bit online, was about the 3DS. And the 3DS announcements were much more interesting than the Wii U stuff, and we thought, why didn't they just put it in there? You know, the 3DS only being launched, you know, a short time before, it had been just kind of pushed to the side for this. And so now they're making a whole bunch of smaller ones. Frankly, who's got the time at E3 to go to a whole bunch of different little things? I mean, yeah, they're focusing one specific closed event for American distributors and one for hands-on for Western gaming media, which is good, so we'll get a chance to look at some of it. But, you know, it's still... There's a showmanship that needs to be there, and it needs to draw it in. And I don't think they're going to get it, especially because so many of these E3 events now are broadcast, not only online, but on actual television. So that's how you bring in new audiences, and you've got to somehow pump up the flare a bit. And I think having small little events really isn't going to boost your... Maybe not your current market that you have, but draw in new people.
You said something, though, that really bugs me. Showmanship.
Yeah.
Does that really have to be the point of E3? Doesn't that just get in the way?
No. Nope.
I mean, like, look at all these companies that spend so much money to outdo each other. Yep. Think of what they could have done if they took that money and put into game development. How many more games would we have? How better would those games be? What, you're shaking your head.
Because.
What do you really get out of showmanship at E3?
I'll tell you. This is the thing. There's people out there who say marketing doesn't work and advertising doesn't work. They're crazy.
Yeah.
These companies do not spend millions for analytics and spend millions more on marketing because it doesn't work. It works. There's a reason they do it. There's a reason they put that much money into it. You can have the greatest product in the world, but if you don't push it out and tell people about it and show it off, it doesn't matter. It's useless. So that's why they bring in people like Kobe Bryant and Joe Montana and the guys from South Park or whoever.
Usher.
To show it off, because that's what makes it pop off the page. That's what makes it stand out from everybody else. And that's what you're there to. Because think about E3. You're there for 5 days, right? And you're seeing so much stuff. When we get back to our hotel at night and we tape our podcast, you need something that stands out to talk about. And it's not just us. It's everybody. Every type of media, every type of vendor, everybody there needs stuff to talk about. And whatever you can do to get yourself to stand out from everybody else that's there, and everybody is there, you have to take that step and make it pop off the page.
Especially now, I think that E3 is an event being noticed by people outside of the media. It's noticed by people like the everyday person. And so there's a bigger chance. And especially if these kind of clips are going to go onto the newscast that night, and people who maybe didn't buy it or didn't buy a Wii U or didn't buy a Wii before, if they see something and it it appeals to them. I mean, you've got to have that kind of attention where it has to stand out. And Nintendo has flopped it in the last 2 years.
And Brian, you're right. It's flair for the sake of flair. And ultimately, it's the quality of the product or the quality of the game that will determine its success. Mm-hmm. But that initial buzz that you need to get is done through things like last year when Usher was there, and then they had him sit and do interviews, and some of our buddies from reviews and stuff got to do interviews with him. That's going to get on channels, and he's going to talk about the game for you, and that's what helps people take notice.
I just think that if you want to spend money on a marketing budget, there are far better ways to spend your money, to put them into television ads and stuff like that, to get that message out. Because as much as you say marketing works, mm-hmm. it's not marketing in and of itself.
No. It's
not that
marketing.
One-time approach. It's like, as you say, cover marketing, where you go and you bang that message out and out and out. And I don't know. Nintendo doesn't agree with you. I don't agree with you, but at least we get to sleep in on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Oh my God, that's such a good point.
That's all I kept thinking. I was like, well, good, we get to sleep in. All the negatives, but here's a positive.
Yeah, all get to sleep on Tuesday because we have to be up at least 6 o'clock in the morning to
so
make it to Nintendo.
And the thing too is, and what people may not know, is that Sony is the one that holds, and I don't know if this is going to be the case because we haven't gotten the schedule yet, but Sony usually holds their presser on Monday evening. Mm-hmm. And after, because they're the last one to go, they have this big party afterwards and stuff, but people usually bail out early because they're like, oh my God, I gotta get back to my hotel, and we gotta do a podcast, and I gotta write my stuff, and then we gotta get up early to go to Nintendo.
6 a.m., that alarm's
now,
going off.
You don't have to get back and get up for Nintendo, you're staying up all night at that Sony party.
Well, especially if day one and two are, you know, both new console reveals.
Hold on. Before you start planning your vacations, I should also mention that those time slots, the one that Sony has, which is late Monday evening.
Yeah.
Microsoft has their one Monday afternoon. Ubisoft and EA are
between right in the middle.
Yeah, somewhere in between
Sandwich
there.
Between, yeah.
And Nintendo is Tuesday morning when the conference starts. The ESA gives out those time slots.
Yeah.
That's not just like, oh, Sony's choosing that we're going to do it this time.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be approved by the ESA, which means that this leaves it open for, say,
Somebody else to go and
do one Tuesday morning instead.
That would be even better because mm-hmm. we've gone a couple years, Brian. You've gone 3 years, and the time the thing is that these are all in different parts of Los Angeles. It's not like they're all in the same area. So the Microsoft one is on the campus of USC, and then the Sony one is at one of their Coliseums, and then so you have to get all around the city. So if they take one of those out of the equation and it makes it easier to get mm-hmm. to them, hey, giddy up.
Well, I thought too. I mean, if Monday is going to be, you know, the Xbox 720 in the morning and the PlayStation 4 in the evening, it wouldn't surprise me if one of them jumped to the Nintendo spot. So it was, all right, so day one is all PlayStation, but then Xbox swoops in the next morning and just, you know, destroys it with, or maybe not destroys it, whatever, with their new console as well. So, I mean, it does leave that kind of option there.
And we should mention that Nintendo has been doing these Nintendo Direct kind of mm-hmm. mini pressers every few months where they kind of have this online session and they show off a whole bunch of stuff that they're doing, and maybe they feel like that's filling the void of the need to do a full-on. I think so. They do, to their credit, they do announce some pretty good stuff in those pressers. They do.
There was a couple weeks ago where it was a new Link to the Past game, I think.
Was it New Mario Kart or New Mario Party?
New Mario Party for the 3DS, that's it. Yoshi Island is coming out as well, stuff like that.
Well, the thing is that, like, that's how they said they're going to start doing more of their announcements now officially anyway. Which I think is okay, but, you know, 200,000 people being able to watch it versus, you know, the possibilities of other websites of events mm-hmm. like this where you could have a bigger market. But poor Luigi. This was the year of Luigi. And he doesn't even get a press conference. He'll get a mini little thing in the corner.
Oh, no, as Luigi would say. Well, we'll definitely have more news about Nintendo and stuff about E3 as it approaches in June. Coming up next, we're going to discuss whether women should be in the next edition of FIFA. That's still to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you in the game?
This is the show called Got Game. It's on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Momin Qureshi. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun are my usual co-hosts, and they're here with me this week. Every week we talk about video games on this show, and one thing we want to talk about is the issue of women and whether they should be in the next edition of FIFA made by EA. Now, this came up in the NHL edition a couple years ago, and we mm-hmm. know a young girl wrote in to the makers of NHL and said, hey, you say you can make a player, you can make yourself in the game, but I'm a girl and I can't make myself in the game. what's up with that? Can you fix it? And we spoke to Sean Ramjag Singh, who produced that game, and said it never dawned on us. And so they changed it around so you could add like long hair and put features on. And then, of course, the year after that, they actually included some female players, like Hayley Wickenheiser, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Same type of thing is now happening with FIFA, where a young girl,
Fernanda from
Boca Raton, Florida, said that she really wants to play as a woman in FIFA 14. And she wrote this petition at www.change.org and saying, by offering just men teams a playable as an option for FIFA, we're not only denying these girls a chance to relate to the characters they play on a video game, but we're also wasting a great opportunity to encourage those same girls to be who they are, develop their passion, motivation, and promote a healthy image and relation between women and sports. And it's hard to argue with that, to be honest with you.
Oh, I'm sure EA Sports will find a way.
Yeah. They'll find a way to argue with it.
Yeah, yeah. Not to make EA Sports...
they'll find a way to compromise with her.
Not to make EA Sports a business. I mean, this isn't anything personal. It just comes down to the fact that video games are built based on how much money you can make off of them. I don't know how well it's known, but NHL, even though the game comes out every year, does not sell well. It does not make a lot of money for EA Sports.
Not globally.
Not globally.
Not really outside of here in some European countries.
Yeah, but also even compared to, say, the NCAA, like if you were to rank the franchises, FIFA, top of the list as far as sales, Madden.
Right.
Then you get down to NCAA, and then you get down to
NHL. And
yeah.
The sports franchise.
So it's one of the lowest selling franchises. Tiger Woods would probably be before NHL, but we have talked to these EA Sports guys in the past.
Yep.
So we know pretty much where it sits in the ranking. So EA Sports puts just enough money into the development of that game to sort of make it worthy of people buying it the next year and so on and so forth. So that's just an example of how money plays such a deciding factor in how these games are designed.
But I think they have an opportunity to make so much money, so much more money, or not so much more money, but at least a little bit more money if they did put women into this game.
Yes, but you've grown up in a culture, and this isn't about our culture versus other cultures, which one's better. That doesn't matter. That's right. Not even on the table. But the truth of the matter is that FIFA sells globally.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it sells far better in countries with different cultures than ours, where women aren't given the same opportunity as they would be in our North American culture.
Hmm.
That's just
to me, that's
a
almost
fact.
More of a reason to put women into the game.
Yeah, I would say
to
so
me,
too.
That screams as much more of a reason to put women into a game. And I know what you're saying. You don't want to offend buyers, but please, like,
well,
grow a pair and put women in the game. Honest to God, EA.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, women's soccer has, especially in the last few years, and especially with Olympic soccer, has really bumped up. I mean, the North American market, we always like to think that we're top dog here, but obviously we're not when it comes to FIFA.
Oh,
but
by far we are not.
No,
the top.
We're not. But wouldn't it be nice if they got a bigger chunk of that North American market? Like, isn't that what FIFA would like a bit? You know, and if it takes a small thing like adding a ponytail, you know, putting a number on. I mean, it's not, you know, you don't have to throw in the entire, you know, U.S. Olympic soccer team.
Exactly.
But, you know, one or two, just even little add-ons, or even a women's soccer DLC where you can play as one of the teams.
Brilliant.
Like anything that you can do in that kind of way where it's just inclusive. You're not, in my world, I don't think you're going to be losing anything by including one more demographic.
Here, I agree with you 100%. And like I was going to say, you don't have to add Mia Hamm or Christine Sinclair or any of those guys in. Just if you just give people to begin with, the same way they did with NHL, the ability to create a female player and interject her into the game, that to me is good enough for now.
It's not that I don't agree with you guys. To me, the more people that can enjoy a video game, the better. But I'm not totally sure that we have the mindset of the majority of people that buy this game. And here's my point. So on the EA Sports forums, there was a poll. It's a little old, but there wasn't a poll for 14. This one asks, would you like female characters in FIFA 13? Not started by us, doesn't involve us. This was just something that happened among the people on the EA Sports forums. They handled this all. So I'm going to give you the results in order from the lowest number of votes to the most. So the lowest number of people with 6% of the total voting says, sure, put it in an online VIP-only mode. So something like pay a little bit of extra money and you can use it online. 6% of the people who voted said that.
I don't agree with that.
9% of the people were with us and said, yes, that's an awesome idea, and I completely agree with that.
9%?
But only 9% of the people who voted suggested that. 24% are either way. They really don't care. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. 29% said, sure, but make it a separate game/mode. So that's 29% of the people who voted. And the most number of people with 32% said no, they have no place in the game.
But if you add, hold on, just one second.
If you add the 32% who said no, they have no place in game, and the 29% that says make it a separate game or separate mode, that's 61% of the people who voted on this said they don't want women in like the main FIFA title. That's what the thinking is.
Now, here's the thing about that. Now, to me, those numbers are surprising, I'll readily admit, although online polling never should surprise you because there's a bunch of people who are...
I don't want to say jerks, but it's jerks.
It's,
yeah, exactly.
Also, different cultures, guys. We can't judge them.
Right.
Just because they don't agree with our culture.
100%. People have different cultures. I understand that. I completely understand that. But here's my thing. FIFA is the number one selling sports video game year after year. Is it going to stop people from buying the game if they have playable female characters? Is some kid in Africa or Asia or Europe who may not want women in the game but loves FIFA not going to buy it because there's a woman in the game? And is there enough of them to counteract the amount of females who may buy the game or may start playing the game? You have to sort of do a cross analytical number crunch, right? And say, okay, our sales may go down this much by people who won't buy it, but then it may go up this much by people who do buy it. And the amount of good press that we'll get because we put females in the game will probably outweigh that much, or it won't outweigh that much.
I can't answer your question. None of us can because we don't have those numbers.
Right.
All I really can say is that my entire point is that these games are based and built based on that information. So if a girl has not made it in yet, I have to say that my best guess is that those numbers show that sales would drop if a woman was in the game.
I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
Even if it's just like, even the poll said, you know, if there was just a separate mode where it was like, okay, well, I'm going to play the women's tournament. I have no problem with there being a women's tournament section of the game. And, you know, if 29% of the people say that, and then 9% of the people say they like it, and then the other, 21 said they don't care, well, there's the majority.
Yeah.
Bring it in. Have it be an option.
But I agree with you. But I think the best way to go right now is to just make it so that when you make your character, you can choose to be a female player and put yourself in. Because part of why you play any one of these sports games is because you want to live out the fantasy. None of us are ever going to play for FC Barcelona or for Manchester United. But when you turn on FIFA and I can throw in a guy named Qureshi onto the team, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to think that there is girls out there who play the game who can do that, but with a dude. You know what? Like, live out your fantasy. Play alongside Messi on Barcelona. You know what I mean? Suit up beside Rooney on Man U. Do whatever you want. Like, it's so baffling to me that people would not want to do that. And I understand different cultures, different everything. I totally get that people are different strokes for different folks. But at this point, I would think that EA should at least take that step and allow it. And then eventually down the line, put players like Mia Hamm in or Christine Sinclair or whoever from other countries into the game. That's what I'd like to see happen.
I can't disagree with you. I agree with everything you say, but at this point, considering we all agree with the same point,
right.
I suggest we move on to the THQ story.
Well, we can. You are listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Before we do that, Brian, I did want to quickly mention, because we did touch on it a little bit last segment, is that we do know that on May the 21st, the worst kept secret in all of video games. May 21st, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Microsoft will reveal, and we quote, a new generation of games, TV, and entertainment, so much like Sony did a couple of months back.
Yep.
That's your new Xbox.
Yeah, it is.
Whether it will be called an Xbox 720,
or
an Xbox 3.
They can't be going 720, can they?
No.
That'd be such a stupid
name.
That
would be a little bit.
I think they should call it, much like Rogers does here, the next box.
Of all the things that come out of that movie with, what's his name, the Wolverine actor?
Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman, when he was in Real Steel with the robots. Xbox 720, that's where this all came from. It was plastered on signs in the background of this fake arena.
Do you know they have a real league, like a real Real Steel league?
Yes. No, I've seen it. It's on...
Spike. And it's awesome. Like, I can't believe... Chris Jericho's on it, and so is George Lucas's daughter. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. May 21st is when we will finally put all the rumors to bed and find out what in the world Microsoft has in store, and that is like 2 weeks before E3 happens. So clearly they're waiting until the last second before they let the cat out of the bag, and then I guess at E3 they'll say, here's the games that you can play for it.
Yeah, so, but sadly, for every game that comes out, I'm expecting them to announce one service. I'm expecting them to announce that you can order pizza from your console.
Would that be such a bad thing?
For every time they have a Halo game or a new Gears of War or something like that. And no, it would not be a bad thing, but I buy a video game console, play video games.
Yeah, if I'm playing Skyrim and I can, as I'm playing it, order some pizza to my house, I think that'd be pretty awesome.
As I say, I don't think that's a bad thing.
I'd be like, I'm going to go on this quest. First, order pizza, and now I will continue questing.
Maybe you could send your guy in Skyrim to order some pizza. That'd be pretty awesome. But to get to your point, Brian, yes, there is some more news on THQ, and boy, how the mighty have fallen. More chunks have been...
I'm actually really excited about this.
I mean, it's good because these franchises will live on. You want to take us down the road?
So the final sales we were expecting from THQ has actually come and gone. Mm-hmm. Like, we talked about this for, last couple of months, 3 or 4 months now, and when it was last left, Saints Row was sold, South Park was sold, mm-hmm. rights to publish Metro Last Light, all of those were gone. But there's a few franchises that were left over, like the Red Faction franchise, like Darksiders, and so on and so forth. Pending approval by a judge, all those franchises have now been sold. And it's weird that the group that came in and took the most for $4.9 million is a Swedish-based publisher called Nordic Games, who came out of nowhere to buy Red Faction, Darksiders, the MX vs. ATV franchise, Supreme Commander, Marvel Superhero Squad, Titan Quest, and a whole bunch more. Now, these are just the rights to the IP. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like they all of a sudden get all the games that were made and the right to publish those. These are just, okay, from now on, Nordic Games has the right to publish Titan Quest games. So that was strange. And also, Gearbox, makers of Borderlands, came and walked off with the Homeworld IP, the much-coveted Homeworld IP, for $1.3 million.
Interesting. So those THQ franchises will live on, and sadly, that's the end of THQ, pretty much. They're done.
But like I said, I'm excited about this, because look where Ubisoft was 2 decades ago.
Yeah.
Ubisoft 2 decades ago, all they were was a distribution point for EA. They are bringing in EA games, converting them to French so a French audience would understand them, and repackaging them and selling them. That's all they did. And slowly over the years, they built up to where they are now. So I'm super excited about this, because this industry has needed fresh blood. Atari's gone, Sierra's gone, Midway's gone, so on and so forth. We need another guy to step in here and bring those jobs, bring that money for more publishing deals, so on and so forth. Get a little bit more development in there. So I'm excited. I'm happy that someone stepped up and now will become a bigger player in this industry.
Still to come on this edition of Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we're going to beam in a review segment. That's all still to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you gameplay?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Omen Qureshi. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun are with me. Every week we talk about video games. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590 or find our blog at sportsnet590.ca. Usually in this third segment we do reviews, so why break tradition? We can do that now. Christine.
Yes.
Star Trek.
I nerded it up this year.
Yeah. Me and you are both big fans of that series. Brian, you are not a fan of the series, correct?
I refuse to answer this question on the basis which it may serve to incriminate me.
It's just going
to
result in ridicule for you, so we'll just leave you out of it. You and I are both big fans. As we know, Star Trek Into Darkness, the movie, coming up right around the corner towards the end of May.
It does.
This game is related but unrelated. You tell us about it. It's just called Star Trek.
Yeah, it is just Star Trek. This game basically... it starts off where the first movie ends off, the J.J. Abrams reboot. By the way, if you haven't seen that movie, there will be spoilers in this.
If you haven't seen that movie, number one, you've had 3 years. Yeah, and number two, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So what's happened is you find yourself in a world where obviously the Vulcan race is only minimal because the planet has been destroyed. What the Vulcans are doing is, now I'm going to nerd out, similar to in the second Star Trek movie where they were talking about Project Genesis was being created. And if you'll remember what Project Genesis was that they were trying to recreate, they're terraforming a dead planet so that it could be reborn. So this is kind of, because they're Vulcans, they're doing this to the extreme. So they're creating a new Vulcan, but they're trying to bring life to it with this giant core which will suck the energy of the sun in to recharge the core of this planet.
Wait, why do you guys watch this show again?
Because it's amazing.
I'm still waiting for you guys to get to the amazing part. Continue.
So, sucking the power of the sun into a planet. Doesn't that sound amazing?
Sounds confusing.
You had me with Vulcan. Go on.
Anyway, so what's happened is they get a distress call and they find out that something is not right on New Vulcan. And our enemies are now the Gorn have come back. And it's this is not the 1960s, you know, Godzilla-looking Gorn. These are creepy lizard monsters with interesting lizard, what do you call it?
Scales?
Scales. No, like shields and armor and such. So these are not just the cheesy little Gorn who just try to attack with the laser beams out of their eyes. These are fully functional, mental, you know, they have capacity.
Calhoun, lizards that shoot lasers out of their eyes.
Hold on.
That was a big thing for you.
The one thing that she says that I could actually understand, lasers coming out of the eyes of lizards, she calls cheesy.
Well, no, if you watch the 1960s, 70s TV show, the Gorns were pretty cheesy.
So is everything else on that show.
It is, anyway. And that's the thing, is that you have to remember that this is a reboot of that series. So, I mean, you're going to find, I'm not going to spoil a lot of it, but there are a whole bunch of throwbacks to the original Star Trek again in this game, which is good. So you can pick either to play as Spock or Kirk. I must say, this is basically a co-op game. You can play it solo, which is what I did, but it gives you not only the option to play co-op, but it gives you the option for a drop in, drop out on Xbox Live. So people can just come in and they can help you out in situations. And I find that I played solo and I played as Kirk. Spock was my AI character and he was all right. You could kind of control him a little bit and tell him where to go, but this game was meant to be played with two people. It really was. Mm. The game fully functions like so much better with two people. When you bring in someone from Xbox Live, it does get a little laggy. It's not as good. So if you and your buddy are going to sit there and play some Star Trek, this is how this game is supposed to be played. It is split screen when you do it that way, by the way. Anyway, there are some interesting problems with this game. One of them is that it doesn't look very nice. I mean, okay, I'm sorry. That's horrible to say. It looks good background-wise. It's very pretty. There's lots of things going on. And they have all of the rights from Paramount, so it's all the right voices. Everybody looks like the characters they are.
Looks like the characters they are may be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I haven't played this game, but I've watched a lot of footage of it.
Yeah.
Those character models? Ooh.
Well, that's what I was getting to as well. What they've done is the engine, they're using the Evolution engine, so it's not the most up-to-date engine they can use. So it has kind of a dated feel to it, which I think is why the characters don't look as good as they could. And all I kept thinking of when I was playing this game is that, especially just getting off of BioShock Infinite and Lara Croft, it's hard to look at these characters and not think this game should have come out like 5 years ago. Yeah. And which is sad because the game it's fun. It's a very Star Trek-y kind of game. And I loved the reboot of the series. And you would think with it's a Namco Bandai. And you would think with CBS and Paramount backing it, they would have a little bit, you know, of higher standard to live up to. But I think because they use the lesser quality engine, it really suffers with not only gameplay, but the look of the game.
It doesn't look like they mo-captioned the faces at all.
No, it really doesn't.
Which makes closing up on characters during the cutscenes really awkward.
There's actually one of the characters that you meet right off the bat is a Vulcan woman who helps you out a little bit through the game. It's kind of, she's the
Tamar, I think.
Yeah, she is the, I forgot her name, thank you. She's the woman who's running the station that's trying to reboot the planet. And you can tell that she's not a real person because she looks so much better than everybody else was. They had that kind of free form to just kind of make her how they wanted to. Mm. And I think that it was just, it just kind of takes it out a bit, not only in the look of it, but yeah, gameplay is, I found a lot of glitches in this game. Like, there was times where Spock would get stuck in the corner, there were times where I would try to walk into a wall, and all of a sudden, all of the animation would be gone except for these two little eyeballs. There were times, even in the cutscenes, where things would fly through things, and there was no damage. I was like, that ship just flew through that other ship, and there was nothing. The pace of this game, though, is really good. It's really fast. There's lots of action. Basically, it's a third-person shooter. Like, there's not really a lot of...
It's also a cover-based shooter, so...
Yeah, Yes. I mean, but I was hoping it would be a little bit more exploratory. Those are always my favorite Star Treks, where you get to walk around and kind of things. And you can gain points by using your tricorder to search and locate stuff. But I found you were going through the game so quickly, the pace of the game is so fast, that I didn't really have the time to look around and try and find and unlock these things. And it's only through these kind of unlockings that you get points to be able to take to upgrade your equipment. So I found, like, halfway through the game, I really wasn't where I should have been. Like, my equipment should have been better, but I hadn't been doing all of the other things because I was running through, and, you know, these Gorn were chasing after me, or I was trying to run over in this side, or something was blowing up. So I felt like I just wasn't given the opportunity.
Sounds like you answered my question before I even got to it. I was going to ask if there was any reason to scan anything in the game, because you do have your weapon, you do have your tricorder.
Mm-hmm.
But from the hour or so that I've been paying attention to this game, it didn't seem like there was any reason to do anything but shoot people.
Yeah, there's a few things, because what happens is you find out that the Gorn have an ability to infect people, and it kind of takes over them and they lose their will, and they will freely attack you. So obviously Bones wants to know what's going on. So he's like, why don't you get scans? Why don't you try and figure this out? So I can, you know, bring, you can, the infected people, you can knock them out and bring them back to the medical bay so they can be tested and try to figure out how to make a cure for this. So that's another reason for the scanning. And also, sometimes if you scan tricorders, it'll tell you little stories. But I found it was weird because it would switch from text-based information to audio-based, where I was... Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I don't really have time to read all this. I don't want to sit down and read. I'd just rather you, as I'm running, you know, use an audio-based to tell me. But the problem with that as well was that sometimes you'd go into the room, and I guess there'd be cues on the floor for different things to happen. So if you were listening to one of the tricorder messages, and you walked through what would be the target to start another part of the story, you would lose that whole bit. So you'd have to go in and re-listen to it all over from the beginning. And the stop and start points for not only that, but the gameplay were at times exhausting, where I was like, you know, The hardest part I found in this game was that even simple jumping. For some reason, jumping mechanisms and climbing mechanisms were not that good. I died more times trying to jump across a gorge than I ever did in any kind of shootout battle. Like, the shootout battles were fine. There were plenty of places to duck and cover to shoot people. But simply jumping across from one side to the other, I must have died like a billion times. I was like, fix this. And you could tell Spock to go over there. You could detect him, and he'd just, oh, well, fine, I'll just jump over with ease. But because you can't switch back and forth to characters when you're doing in single player, which I wish that you could, there was nothing you could do. You could keep telling him to go places, but until you jumped that gorge yourself, you weren't doing it. So it was very frustrating. But there's a lot of good things about this game as well. I mean, the story is pretty good. I mean, it leads up, assuming that it has some kind of lead up into what will be the next movie coming out this summer. I like that it advances the Vulcan storyline a little bit, because, you know, what are you going to do when your planet blows up and there's only, like, maybe 1,000 of you left?
That's,
you know,
what we're all asking.
And so this way as well, it doesn't have to be, for me, it doesn't have to be solved as much in the next movie. It was because of all the licensing, right? Everything sounds right. All of the, you know, old-fashioned phasers are there, all the beamings, and it looks cool, and it sounds really good. And like I said, the backgrounds are really cool. There's one part where you're running through, earlier on in the game, where you're running through an engine, and everything around you is moving, and you have to work together to stop parts of the engine so you can shoot out the blocks, or shoot out the brakes so it can stop so you can run through. And there was so much going on, and it all, at that time, really, really flowed well, so it gave me a lot of hope for the game, because it's almost right in the beginning, and then it just kind of taps out after that. So
what are we thinking overall score?
I'm going to give it a 5. It's not a bad game, but it's not a good game.
Interesting. 5 out of 10 for the new Star Trek from Christine. Brian, that leaves you about 3 minutes to talk about Lego City Undercover The Chase.
Wow, what will I do with the extra 2 minutes? So, The Chase Begins is what this is actually called. Lego City Undercover The Chase Begins. It's a prequel story to the Wii U game that came out a couple months ago, starring the exact same character. And it's really kind of disappointing, because it's really a shadow of that game. Now, what the developer did, and I should say same developer, for both the Wii U version, the 3DS version.
I should mention this is the 3DS version.
Yeah, this is the 3DS version.
Right.
The Wii U version is just called Lego City Undercover. Mm-hmm. But for the 3DS version, they tried to take that Wii U game and fit it on the 3DS. So it's kind of cool. You got this big open world, but the 3DS is not known for its technical capabilities. That's not what Nintendo does. They don't make systems that are the next generation, they make the last generation so that they can sell it to you at the same price and still make a profit. I'm not judging that. That's just the way that things are done. But as a result, a lot of stuff had to be cut from that Wii U title. And it's frustrating because most of the voice acting went. Now, there's a few cutscenes here and there, and those cutscenes are as great as the ones in the Wii U title. But the majority of the voice acting and the cutscenes from the game are gone, which is the reason why you would play, as an adult, why you would play that Wii U title. Because it's not about the gameplay. I mean, we call it a Lego City Grand Theft Auto clone. That's not 100% accurate. It's not as close as you would think it is to Grand Theft Auto, but that's the closest representation we can make. But once you get into that world, you, I don't want to say put up with, but you kind of deal with the fact that the gameplay is not going to be that deep in order to experience a story. That's why you play the Wii U version of Lego Cities Undercover. But without that voice acting, and I'm not totally sure who the writer was on this, but the writing did not seem to be as great. Really, all you're doing is playing the game mechanics. And when those game mechanics pretty much come down to the fact that you go and you find this new area of the city, and then in that area you locate an outfit, and then you do some side quests, and then you do this boss battle, and then you rinse and repeat until you're through all the areas of the game, it's not really that much of an interesting experience. So as much as I enjoyed the Wii U version of the game, like, I'm not suggesting that anyone really picks this up. Maybe if you have a little kid who really likes Lego, they may enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But as an adult who was really looking forward to the experience I was basically expecting from the Wii U game, even if it wasn't the same gameplay, at least the same voice acting, the same sort of storyline, that sort of stuff, that would have been fun. But no, they tried to get the same gameplay instead. And as a result, the entire game was just kind of boring. So I'm going to give it a 5.5 out of 10.
Oof, bad week for reviews. Yeah, 5 out of 10 for Star Trek, 5.5 out of 10 for Lego City Undercover, The Chase Begins.
What you should do is save all your money and wait till next week and buy Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. But we can't say why until next week, so we'll do that then.
Exactly. And that's all we have for this week. For Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, I'm Omid Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.